And welcome again to this special episode of Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holley. This episode is part two of our season review, as we will be rating the coaches, Mike Rigg, and Shad Khan for the season. We have much to get through. Before I do anything, I have to welcome back David to the show. David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. I'm actually dreading this show today because
why?
This is
why are you dreading?
Well, this is one of the hardest shows to rate. You know, you watch the players on the pitch and you can kind of formulate an opinion about whether they're playing well or whether they're playing badly. But now we've got to discuss people that, you know, we don't actually see them in their day-to-day work. All we just see is the end product of their work. And to be honest, it's been a bit of a shambles this year. Well, the end product's been a shambles. Doesn't necessarily mean that their work's been a shambles, but that's the implication. So if you see what I mean, it's a bit harder, actually, isn't it, to directly rate these guys.
Yeah, I see where you're going on that, David, because, again, this is off the pitch, but what they've done off the pitch affects what's going on the pitch. So it's difficult, but we can really talk about it and get into it. And I know you'll be fair, and I'm not worried about you being fair, but it is a good type of show to do, David, and I look forward to doing it with you. But before we get into all of this, I do have to mention this because I saw this earlier on Twitter. I don't know if you did. I'm pretty sure you probably did. I'm going to read this tweet from Mike Rigg, because there's been some talk about the whole situation with the embargo. Has it been lifted? And fans are really concerned about it. So I happened to see this earlier from Mike, our co-host. And listen, for Mike to tweet this out, he must feel pretty strongly about it. I'm going to read it to you, David. I want to get your thoughts. Again, this is earlier on Twitter. Co-host Mike Rigg, Cottage Talk co-host, tweeted this out. Been told today that Fulham are out of the embargo and clubs should announce it this week. All right, David, what are your thoughts about this from Mike? Again, I preface this. If Mike is tweeting this out, he must feel pretty strongly that this is true.
Well, this has been the big sort of talking point for me for the last few days, that we've heard that other clubs who were hit at the same time as us have been, you know, have come out of embargo, whether it's been announced officially or not, but it seems to have been either from one end or the other. But of course, Fulham being Fulham, we always sort of last to the party with these things, isn't it? And left in the dark. And of course, we were sort of went into it in this respect and this way now. And there's been people saying, oh, well, actually, we, you know, maybe we're not coming out of the embargo. Maybe we haven't met the satisfactory levels of whatever was needed. And there's been all this kind of speculation then between ourselves and everywhere that, well, you know, what if we're not out of embargo? Whose head should go first, et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, you know, if we're ever going to get anywhere, we need to get out of this embargo because,
of course,
it's going to limit what Slavia can do. We need a major squad overhaul. I think we're all more or less in agreement with that. That isn't going to happen if we've got an embargo. It's going to be very, very difficult anyway. So this is a very, very important thing. The trouble is, it's how long will we be able to stay out of embargo? Because the amount of spending that we need to do and the amount of new players, it's going to be quite hard, I think, you know, to buy a whole new squad or whatever however we're going to get them without risking going back into embargo again in the future. You know, there's already speculation that clubs like Derby maybe could be in trouble if they don't get promoted. And they're up against it, obviously. Because they against your favourite side, you know, they're three down already.
I know, David. I'm very upset by that, by the way.
I suppose the only good thing would be if we got rid of your favourite side, we wouldn't have to play them in the league. But it would seem a bit upsetting if they're in the Premier League again and we're not. But you know, it's going to be a very fine balance to be had, of course, to come out of embargo. To stick within the FFP guidelines and not go back into it when we're in a situation where we may need to make a lot of changes. Because, you know, can you imagine getting 15 new people in and not spending that much money? You know, we need people of quality, of course, and these things don't come easy. Sometimes you can be very lucky and you can pick up the odd face for you know, a relative bargain. But in this day and age, you know, there's silly fees even for moderate players. So it's a difficult situation to be in for the club. But the first step is obviously to get rid of the embargo. Otherwise, next season really could be a washout as well, unfortunately. So, let's hope this is true, what Mike's saying. And I think I tend to agree with you that if Mike, is thinking this is the way we're going, then it's probably fairly accurate.
Yeah, and that's the only reason why I decided to mention it. I've also put it on the Facebook page and obviously retweeted it out on Twitter because Mike, you know, I trust Mike. That's why if Mike has a source telling him this, then I tend to believe it. I feel pretty strongly that Mike is telling the truth, but only we will officially know when Fulham lets us know. But what's interesting, David, I'm glad that you brought up the whole embargo situation, because if I can remember correctly, they'll be looking at the prior season for say back going forward into November for say anyone that is going to get embargoed again in November. It would probably be, if I'm understanding correctly, based on how we spent this season, you know, this past season, and then of course the spending for next season would affect the next season. I think that's how it works, David. So I have a feeling, again, Mike would know better than us, but I have a feeling if we've done our due diligence and this season and we didn't overspend for this particular season, I think we should be okay. But again, only time will tell, David. But you do have to be careful with how you spend. But what's interesting, David, is I think they're going to have a good amount of money to spend from transfer sales. I keep seeing all this speculation about Mitroglou. Of course, we have Dembele, you know, and there could be others as well. So they can use that money to reinvest. So we'll see how this all plays out. But let's start at point A, and that's with the embargo. And if it's lifted, then that's a very good thing, and we can move on, and Fulham can start building towards the new season because they really need to, David. I agree with you. If the embargo was not to be lifted, they'd be in some serious trouble. But let's not worry about that now. Let's see how everything plays itself out. All right, David, let's now get into the season, and now we're going to just talk about the management. You did an excellent job, and I want to say an excellent job of rating the players, really. I've actually heard from people telling me what a great job you did. I know you told me that you hadn't, but I had. So I just wanted to mention that to you on the show so you know this. You did a really good job. As you mentioned, this one's a little bit more difficult because we're talking about off-the-field, off-the-pitch things. So let's start with the coaches. Let's start with Kit, all right? I want you to rate Kit for the season, but I'm going to give you some interesting stats to help you rate Kit. And I found this interesting because I went back, David, and I looked at Kit's record from last season, and then also I have combined for two seasons. So I'm going to give you, first of all, for last season, Kit's record as in charge as the head coach of Fulham Football Club, David, he won 5, he drew 5, and he had 6 losses. His winning percentage for last season was 31%, okay? Now, if you look at his entire career as the Fulham head coach, this is a course of two seasons, 64 matches, David. Kit was, under Kit, Fulham were 22 wins, 17 draws, 25 losses, and a winning percentage of 34.4. It's very interesting. Okay. And I will also give you the winning percentage of Slavica when we get to him. But let's stick with Kit. What are your thoughts of Kit in charge of Fulham Football Club for the prior season, and give me a rating?
Well, for Kit, actually, I already had an idea in my head, and this was not stats-based at all. I haven't used any stats whatsoever, so I guess when cottage talk becomes revolutionized, all the stats guys will be throwing me out as well, because I'm not using stats. I'm using my opinion.
That's okay, David.
For me, my opinion, and this is to sum up Kit, is mediocre or average. I don't think Kit was awful. I think Kit's problem is that he was mediocre or average. And we need to be above that if we're going to ever get promoted back to the Premier League. He wasn't sacked because we were at the bottom of the league. He was sacked because we weren't moving forward. That was all. That's how I see it.
Correct.
And that's Kit's problem. I think as an interim coach, he did an okay job. But as a permanent coach, he just wasn't good enough. But for Kit, I think he was doing the best he could. And you know, for that's the quandary of it all. But his best just wasn't good enough. So I think for me, you know, my rating for Kit would really be based on the factors of mediocrity. So I would be giving him a 6 out of 10, because to give him higher would suggest that he was successful, I think. But to give him less would kind of, I don't know, suggest that maybe he didn't try hard enough or something along those lines. But I think he tried hard. but I just think his best isn't good enough for Fulham. And you can look at that in lots of ways. His selection, his tactics, his use of substitutes or lack of use of substitutes often. The frustrating thing with Kit was that he wasn't proactive at all. He was very reactive, I think, but often his reactions were much too slow. It was like, you know, trying to, I don't know, we need Yanis here to come up with some sort of metaphor or something, but, you know, a drunk guy in a bar, you know, trying to respond to a punch or something. You know, it was too slow. He would do things after that he'd been outfoxed by the opposition manager or coach. He would make substitutions too late. I think, you know, an ideal situation would be, and we got away with it in a way, but the match against Middlesbrough at the end of the season before where they made those three changes, and suddenly they were a different team. And they came right back from a losing situation, Middlesbrough. And it was only the fact that they needed the win, really, that they went chasing the game, that they gave us a chance to break away and score. But you know, that their manager was proactive, you know. He really tried to, you know, to do something. But Kit didn't seem to have that. He didn't seem to have that sharpness of thought. He didn't come across as being particularly a deep thinker. He had his kind of set ways and he stuck to them. He had his favourite players, he stuck to them, he had his favourite systems. We didn't really see much in the way of excitement from Kit. And that's the thing I think we became frustrated with, that, you know, we kept seeing the same people. And all the same old faces again, you know, the arguments about people like Jazz Richards. And obviously, you know, was a Kit person because of the Welsh connection. And others as well. We saw it again with Brian Ruiz the season before. Even though Ruiz didn't really want to play and his heart wasn't in it, he kept picking Brian Ruiz. And there was an argument that, you know, and there's always an argument. We've had the same argument with Heinemann this year, with Dembele, etc.
Sure.
Do you pick these players or not? But for me, Kit very much had his favourites. I'm sure other managers do as well. But at least I think we've seen with Slavisa that he has prepared to chop and change around. And there's people who've been 1 minute dead in the water and the next minute they've been brought back, or vice versa. You know, when Slavisa came in, he gave Alex Kakanicic a good run, but obviously at some point decided he wasn't good enough and off he went. But with Kit, we didn't really see that, I think. And it was just very conservative, his selection and his tactics. As I say, he didn't really have much of a plan B. When things went wrong, he reacted too late to them. There was not that many occasions where he really kind of wowed you with his selection or his tactics. I think obviously there was one occasion, the Reading game, it probably saved him his job. It bought him a few more weeks in his job. If you remember the Reading game at home.
Yes, I do.
Where I don't know really what happened, whether it was down to Kit, whether it was down to luck, but things did change and suddenly we were a much better team. But in the main, no, it didn't happen. He didn't get the best out of the players we had. It was consistent, but it was mediocre, really, for me. And that's why I think 6 out of 10 for Kit is fair, because he was obviously a Fulham man. He was obviously trying his best. But I think we could see that he was out of his depth in terms of taking Fulham on to the next level.
David, I actually think this is a very fair analysis. And listen, I've had my issues with Kit. I wanted him to succeed. I wanted him to be the head coach / manager, whatever you want to call him. And for whatever reason, he was very, very reactive and not proactive. And that, for me, told me that he was not the right guy for Fulham Football Club. I think you need someone to be more proactive. And he just wasn't. You know, again, you brought up a very good point. If you want to look at that Reading match, that would give you hope. But that was really what kept him in his job. And then a few weeks later, that was the end of Kit. But that was a sign like, wow, if he can pull a team through a match like that, maybe. But that was really the ending for me, because then, of course, the very end was the Birmingham match that got him sacked. But for me, it's being late for changes. You know, again, he would not change David at halftime. He would change 60th, 70th minute. I actually remember watching interviews with him, he said, like, well, I want to give my guys a chance, I'm paraphrasing, to prove that they belong, to stay in the match, you know, let them work through their issues. But the problem with that is that sometimes you need to make changes to change the game. And he would wait way too long, or he would react to what the other manager or head coach did, and then unfortunately it would be too late instead of being proactive. So that to me is what sold me that it was time to change Kit Simons. He was an average manager. He did a job. He deserves credit for keeping us up. Let's just say that. He deserves credit. But I wanted him changed after last season, and he wasn't, and I feared that what ended up happening would happen, and it did happen. So, David, seriously, your rating of an average six is fair.
Well, I'm trying to be fair, and I'm trying to be objective. It's easy. At the time, obviously, we were all down on Kit, and I can remember giving him some very low ratings on a match-by-match basis because I was, infuriated with his lack of, his lack of proactiveness, I suppose, his lack of intrigue, his lack of, team selection, the fact that we wanted to see something different. We wanted to see him make changes. We wanted to see him try things, perhaps, rather than just go out with the same old system, same old favourites. And we never saw that, and he'd stand there with his hands on his pockets. But for Kit, as I say, I think you saw how he was in some of the interviews, and I think he looked quite harrowed by it. I think he found it a real stressful situation. A poison chalice of a job, one that he took, perhaps, he took it before his time, he stepped in as caretaker, he lifted the team. I think some of that was the fact, the honeymoon period of getting rid of Felix, really, because Felix was obviously a complete lunatic, and the guys had they bounced back from this. It's not very politically correct, I know, to say he was a complete lunatic, but that kind of...
That's okay.
It describes Felix, and I think the players bounced back from that. And initially, Kit could do no wrong, really, because it was a much nicer place to be at the club without Felix there, and the players were happier.
Sure.
But I think what happened really was that we got found out because Kit was very much an exponent of the diamond. And initially, the players were playing and something was carrying through. But then other teams started to realise that, in fact, we had no width and we had no pace. And they worked out how to play against us. And that's what, for me, was very, very obvious under Kit.
Sure.
And I think, we generally agreed on quite a short between us, although we had different views of Kit. I know Mike was more pro-Kit than I was. But I think we all agreed that at this stage, Kit needed to do something different. He needed to try other things. He needed to be adaptable. And this is what he didn't do. And we saw it with, I think in the last game of the season at Norwich last season, he could have put out anybody. He could have played Patrick Roberts, giving him a go to keep him happy. But he didn't. And he played the same old faces, and we got beaten anyway. And things like that just kind of make you wonder, what was going through his head. It was a nothing match for our point of view whatsoever. He could have carried faith. Look at Patrick Roberts now. Patrick Roberts has started to do really well in Scotland. Yes, you can argue the standard of football isn't that good apart from a couple of teams, but he's doing really well. He's getting a run in the team now. Had he given Patrick Roberts a run in the team, had he found a place to put Patrick Roberts in the team, which is another question, maybe Pat Roberts would have stayed a bit longer. Who knows? Saying that, we got a good price for him, so we can't be too upset. But there's lots of things, under Kit. And we can say the same things for this as well, under Slavisa and stuff. Perhaps the damage was done already, but, it looks likely we lose Dembele and Heinemann. You have to question the whole sort of rationale of who gets to play and whether some players are worthy of a place in the team, whether they're worth adapting the team to allow certain players to play, or whether you should just rigidly play who you think your best 11 is, regardless of talent. And it's, every coach is going to be different on these things. But I think for me, these are the Kit's failings, are that he wasn't adaptable, or he didn't like to experiment. He was predictable in his selection. I mean, we went from Felix Bingo to no Bingo, if you remember, with Kit. I think I'm sure most weeks we guessed for Kit's lineup on Cottage Talk. We got it more or less. That's right. He was very predictable, and that's, you can't afford to be predictable unless you have, if you've got a team of superstars, and if you've got, when we had Roy Hodgson's team, it was predictable in a different way. We were solid at home, and we were set up to be solid but negative away, and it worked for us. We had the players and we had the talent to do that. But when maybe when you haven't got quite the talent or the experience, because we had a lot of changes and unsettlement, you can't be predictable all the time. You have to have something different. You have to outthink the other team, and he didn't. He was not able to outthink the other team. A great coach, a great kind of right-hand man maybe, but not manager material for me, not at this stage anyway.
Right. And, David, like I said, I think that your analysis was spot on. And, you know, like I said, I wanted it to work with Kidd. That's why I'm disappointed that it didn't, but I could see it coming. And you've given all the reasons basically how I feel. So you really did a great job of analyzing Kidd. Now, we're not going to talk about Peter Grant or why am I forgetting the his assistant. It is blinding me, David. Mention the other person that I'm forgetting that's still on the staff.
Stuart Goldman Gray.
There's a Goldman for you. Stuart Goldman Gray. We'll call him that. That's great. So we're not going to analyze them or rate them because it's unfair. But we have to go to the polar opposite, I think, of Kidd, and we're going to talk about Savisa. Now I'm going to give you some information on Savisa. I know you're not into stats, but here are some stats for you. Here is his record with Fulham. 24 matches, David. 7 victories, 6 draws, 11 losses. His winning percentage, 29.2%. It's less than Kidd's. Very interesting. You know, and what's interesting, his time at Watford, I'm going to give that to you as just a comparison. Completely different clubs, completely different teams, talent-wise. There's no question about it. But with Watford, Savisa had 36 matches in charge. 21 wins, 5 draws, 10 losses. That was a winning percentage of 58.3, and that's why they went up. So you could see the difference between Watford and Fulham from the year prior. But, all right, my friend, this is going to be interesting. It's now time to rate Savisa.
Well, this is a difficult one because the logic should say that, well, I've given Kidd a 6, and Slavisa's done worse statistically, therefore he should get less. But the trouble is with Slavisa, he's come in. It's always harder to come in, I think, halfway through a season and pick things up than it is when you have, you know, the whole pre-season to start with. And at least Kidd did have the option, at least, of bringing in, you know, players that he wanted, or supposedly he wanted, or the club wanted, and a summer to work with them. That was half the reason for keeping Kidd, I think, was the continuity aspect. There was a big argument he should have gone at the end of last season, and probably it would have been right to do so. But he had the pre-season. At least he had the players to work with. Slavisa didn't have that, and it's been difficult. And I think for Slavisa, the task is more difficult as well, because not only is it a matter of assessing what additions we need to make to the squad, it's really this oversized, inflated squad is seeing who he has to get rid of. So the only thing he's been able to do, which he's had to do, is literally give everybody a chance. And there's been a terrible amount, obviously, of, you know, chopping and changing. It's almost back to the Felix Bingo levels, and it's been frustrating because there's been times when it looks like we've found a reasonable pattern. He went to the 3-5-2 we wanted to see, then he ditched it in favour of a very strange 4-4-2 with the 4 central defenders and the 4 central midfielders, which had surprisingly, you know, some success. We had our mini revival run. We lost Rowan Hintz, or we lost Michael Maddle, and the wheels fell off again. But, you know, and obviously I was panicking at that time. You know, 3 wins on the trot. Russ, you were very close, of course, to your prediction coming true, which I don't think I don't think one person who is on the show or even listens to the show would have believed that we could win 5 out of the last 10. We all thought you were completely mad. And in the end, Russ, you know,
I was wrong, though. I was wrong, David.
You were wrong, but you weren't as wrong as you could have been. It surprised us. I was certainly panicking. I have to admit that I was panicking. Not that we were winning, of course, but on the fact that you could have actually been right. That would have been a big loss for me there, but we saw a lot. I mean, if we didn't see any experimentation with Kidd, you could say we almost saw too much experimentation with Slavisa, and that was probably part of the problem, that we didn't have a lot of consistency. Obviously, certain key players tended to play all the time, but apart from that, defence were changed, midfield was changed. The only positions really that weren't changed were the two strikers. We saw more or less all the time, with, you know, the same two up front. And of course, to the detriment probably of the team and to Slavica, when we did play only the one up front, we looked worse for it. So that was, you know, he tried it once, it didn't work, and so for him to try it again was a little bit of a surprise. And we also saw other things that they worry you slightly, because he tried out Ashley Richards. I think he realised he was no good, because we even had that article that time when he said, you know, there's still a chance for Ashley Richards to come back to the team. You know, he has to reinvent himself as a centre-back or a centre-midfield or whatever it was.
I remember that.
So it was like it was almost as if he's saying, I don't think you're good enough to play in the team, but here's an olive branch. I'm not going to rule you out completely. And then what happens? He brings him in at Brentford. He has a complete disaster. We're two goals down in 7 minutes, partly because of him. The guys booed off at half-time along with half the team. What seems like it makes you wonder is, say, hold on a minute. Slavica seems to have worked out that Ashley Richards wasn't good enough. And then he's brought him back. Why? And there's been a few like that, and you think, you know, he played McCormack as a one up front on his own. He also played in one game, as I think, as a left midfielder. To do it once is okay, maybe. He has to experiment. But to do it more than once, I don't know. So you do question about Slavica, that sometimes what is he actually trying? There's a certain amount, obviously, experimentation, rotation to try, but at other times, I don't know. And you think, this worries me a little bit. But obviously, it's hard when the squad has been as troubled as we've been. You know, the amount of goals we've let in, the amount of turmoil we've had. And I stand by my original conviction that I don't feel the squad is good enough. You know, the table doesn't lie and all that, again. And anyone who says we are a top eight squad, I would say no, I don't agree with you. Because I don't think we would be that far below where we are if we really were a top eight squad. Yes, you can be unlucky. You can, you know, you can not quite get there. But we're a long way from that. So I think that Slavica has been hampered by the time he's come in, the situation we're in already, and the lack of quality in the squad. And he obviously has a different style of things, and he wants to see, you know, different players here. And I think, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next season, assuming we are lifted from embargo and within reason we can bring in anyone who we want. How many people will change? How different the makeup of the team will be next season? And then it'll be easier to qualify a mark that I'm going to give him now, because at the end of the day, we can say, obviously, it was the players. The problem was the players. It wasn't really Slavica. He was trying to implement his systems. The players weren't good enough to carry those systems out. But for me, I think Slavica's been, I think he's been better than mediocre, because I think okay. we have seen a little bit of something there that we didn't see before. We've seen in some games, we've seen more of a system, perhaps more of an organisation, more of an attempt to try things. Perhaps
more of a plan.
More of a plan.
More of an actual style and plan.
Yeah, I think this is. Yeah, you helped me out there. Thanks. This is what I'm trying to say. There's definitely been a plan. Whether the plan was the right thing or not, I don't know. But there's been a plan. Kits just was kind of. Make it up as you go along, but with Slavica,
there was no identity with Kit, David. There was no identity with Kit.
So for me,
sorry,
I that's fine. For me, I don't think Slavica is worth. You know, I could justify from what I've said, from the stats alone, that Slavica should get less than Kit, because in terms of results, his record has been worse than Kit's. But I think there has been a plan there. I think we've all seen a plan. It's just the question is whether we've got the right players to employ that plan, and two, whether the plan is actually the right plan for what we need. because you have to have the right players to fit the plan, and you have the right
That's
plan
right.
to fit the players, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
That sounds a bit...
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Go ahead.
So, for me, I'm going to give Slavica 7 out of 10, because I think he is a quality coach and a quality manager, but he's worked at the moment with one hand tied behind his back. He's got the task, unfortunately, of going through all the players to see who is good enough and who isn't. And I think in the main he's done that sort of three quarters of the time he's got it right. I think a quarter of the time, you know, maybe he hasn't. He's made some poor choices and selections. But, you know, we don't see them on the training ground. We don't, you know, like he does. Perhaps he sees things on training grounds which gives him a reason to think that someone, you know, someone will be better than they are or more useful or the plan would work with them. You know, I play football and when we play, you know, five a-sides and when we play 11 a-sides, you'd be surprised how different players can be. You know, whether we play on AstroTurf, whether we play on grass, again, it makes a big difference, you know. You'd be quite surprised. Players who perhaps are quite ordinary in five-a-side are quite good in 11-a-side, or vice versa. And so I think, you know, we don't see the whole picture. But for me, right. Slavica, his pedigree speaks for itself. I'm giving him 7 out of 10 on the basis that I think there's more of a plan and there's more to come from him, and he's a much more erudite manager. He's a much more thinking manager or coach than Kit is or was. But really, until we get to next season and see what happens and where we go from there, you know, we will find out if I've been too generous or not. I don't think I've been too lenient, because I don't think he deserves more than a 7, because there's still been some pretty horrific things going on out there. There's been some very strange selections at time. And as I say, playing McCormack up front on his own, bringing Richards back and other things. But I think we could say 7 is a good benchmark for now. Either he's going to get better next season, or you're going to say, actually, David, you were too generous. So 7 okay. out of 10 for me.
Okay, very interesting, David, because I was just thinking off the top of my head. I might have gone a little bit lower. And I wouldn't have blamed you if you went at 6 or even lower because of the record, but I think you did a really good job of explaining why you were giving him a 7. And I see where you're going on that. It's about the plan. It's about being more cerebral. That's a good word to use, David, where he's really trying to match wits with the other managers / head coach and trying to find an advantage for Fulham. And he's doing that, and he's very proactive, extremely proactive. He is not afraid to make changes in the first half. He's not afraid to make changes at halftime. He is trying to change the game. When he's not afraid, David, when things are going wrong, to say, you know what, I got this one wrong, I need to change it. And that's something that I actually admire in a coach. It's what I wanted in a coach. So for that reason, I see why you went with a 7. But I could, like I mentioned, I could see if you were to mark him down because of the actual record itself. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, if you had said 6 or 5.5, I wouldn't have blamed you. But I do understand where you're going, because that's kind of my thinking on this. But we will find out this season if you were too generous. You are right about that, because if the results don't match everything else that we're talking about, then you were generous. But right now, I understand why you gave him a 7, David. Very interesting analysis. And listen, I think we'll find out a great deal about Slavica when he gets his own team, because this was really Kit's team and Mike Riggs' team. Let's call what it was. You know, this was not the team that he built. He was coming in the middle, and that's why it's difficult to really give an interesting rating. But Mike, I called you Mike. I can't believe I called you Mike. That's actually a compliment to you, David, to call you Mike, to Mike Gregg. I certainly wouldn't call you Mike Gregg. Let's just leave it there. Nothing against Mike Gregg. I would call you Mike Gregg. But let's now go over and let's talk about rating Mike Gregg, and this is going to be interesting. Chief Football Officer, David, that's his title. I'm going to give you all of the players that he brought in, okay? He brought in a ton of players, so I'm going to give them all to you. Just let's go through the list, and then you can actually rate the job he did building the team that Kit had, and then, of course, Slavica had. Here are all the players, and there are, like I mentioned, there are a ton of them. Let's start with your favorite, David, Jazz Richards. Then we move on to Luke Garbutt on loan from Everton. Then we go to Richard Stearman, Ryan Fredericks, Tom Kearney, Joe Lewis on loan from Cardiff City, Tim Ream. Then we go to, I almost forgot, I can't forget Ben Pringle, who was sent out on loan to Ipswich Town, but we got Ben Pringle. Then we go to a couple players on loan, Zachariah Labied on loan from Sporting, which obviously didn't work out. Chris Baird on loan from Derby County. Jamie O'Hara. Andy Lonergan. And then at the very end, we're talking about other loan players. We have Rowan Ince on loan from Brighton and Hove Albion. Like I mentioned, David, that is a ton of players that he brought in. It's time to rate Mike Rigg, David.
Well, this is where it gets really difficult because we don't see Mike Rigg on a day-to-day basis. You know, we don't see him picking a team. We don't see him standing by the touchlines. He doesn't come out and say, well, I picked this team because I thought it would win and whatever. All we see is, obviously, the players who've come in, and the rest is all hearsay. I mean, if I took a straw poll on Twitter, we'd be giving him 0 out of 10 or something down there because he seems to be one of the least liked people at the clubs or one of the people that the fingers are pointed at most often. It's probably good that in a way that I'm doing this because I don't know the guy. If Mike Gregg was doing this, I should say, he obviously has dealings with him. So I know he would probably be more generous because he knows him and he sits down with him face to face. But for me, when you list those players out that have come in, you know, for me most of them have been failures, not successes, for one reason or another.
Right.
Obviously, Ashley Richards goes without saying. Richard Stearman, really more of a failure than a success so far.
Disappointment.
Jim Rean, likewise. Ben
yep.
Pringle, likewise, really, which is, you know,
yep.
sounds strange, but he's come in, had a few games, and he's been shipped out on loan. So he's not been a success for Fulham, really. He's not been part
did
of
I
the
Did I not mention
side.
Tom Kearney, by the way? If I didn't mention Tom Kearney, I apologize.
No, you did.
That's one
I
of
mean,
the
I'm just listing the bad ones at the moment, but,
okay.
you know, Joe Lewis, you know, an average goalkeeper, really, who in another life would never have got near the first team at Fulham, but we just happened to have, obviously, injuries to Bettinelli and Lonergan. And the question is already debating that we need a new goalkeeper, and so even Bettinelli wouldn't be in the first team, let alone Lonergan, probably. So all those so far, I would say, have been failures. Obviously, Tom Kearney has been very positive.
I forgot to mention one, David, before you go any further. I forgot to mention Michael Maddle. So there you go. There's another Goldman for you.
Well, Michael Maddle has been post, obviously, Slavisha. So
sure.
I'm not sure if that was part of his influence or not. We don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, who brings who in? I would imagine Jazz Richards was something to do with Kit. Whether Mike, you know, Rigg was the instrument in all these things, obviously, but...
Sure.
I'm sure there must be some sort of input from the coach or the manager at the time. But I would say most of those signings, and we didn't mention Labed yet, but he came in, was very disappointing, and buggered off early, I believe. So I would say that, you know, that if you look at it overall, the signings have failed to impress. I don't know if you think differently to that, Russ, but I don't think, apart from Tom Kearney, any of those have been a resounding success. Obviously, Michael Maddle's been useful since he came in, but
yes,
and in potentially as well. But you know, we're talking about people who are brought in as loans, not necessarily people who are here as a regular signing. So,
sure.
Of course, Luke Garbutt as well was there, but I think Luke Garbutt was disappointing as well overall.
Yeah. It's funny, David, because when you go through the list and you look at the players that succeeded, and of course I'm going to include Michael Maddle. Like you said, he is alone. We're not sure who's responsible for that, but it's still under his watch, David. So you kind of have to give him credit for that. I know the whole story with Jamie O'Hara and Kit. I know that sounds like more of Kit, but again, he signed under Mike Rigg. And for part of the season, you know, Jamie O'Hara was our best player. So you have to give him some credit for that. And of course, Andy Lonergan, you know, like he says, is a backup goalkeeper, did a decent job. So there are some on the fringe. The only real success is Tom Kearney. You know, and I'm almost there to put Ryan Fredericks as one of the successes, except that he gets injured too much and really can't go 90. So the only real success out of all the players we're talking about, David, the only real successes really are going to be Tom Kearney and, I guess, Michael Maddle, because I think he's going to work out, you know, or did work out. But overall, David, where things fall apart for me, on the face of it, on paper, many of these players look like that it should have worked out. But it goes back to having a plan. What was Mike Riggs' plan, David? Did all these pieces that he brought in fit together? And I have to say, the results speak for themselves. They didn't. And I remember Emilio saying this several times to me, that all these players, and I think Mike Riggs said this too, all these players came with reputations and played well for their former teams. How did they all of a sudden all get bad at the same time, all have bad seasons? I just think part of it has to do with, I don't think all the pieces fit together, David. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely, absolutely. And as I say, there's also, and some of it's hearsay, but there's been talk of transfer deals which fell through because of Mike Riggs. And, I mean, you know, it's difficult to sort of assess how, you know, how much this is true, how much is fact, how much is opinion. But there has been a few stories about this. And there's been, you know, there's been quite a strong, if not majority, a large minority of people who have been critical of Mike Riggs, either because of what they've heard, rumours, or perhaps they have some in the know knowledge, let's say, and we don't know that. But I think Mike Riggs, you know, at the moment, the jury is very much out, but they're almost, if anything, they're almost about to come back with a guilty verdict, really, I think, if you're looking at it like that. I don't think Mike Riggs is going to be found not guilty in this, to be honest with you. He is one of the central pieces in all of this. He hasn't been there the whole time. Obviously, Alistair Mack's been there the whole time. Shahid Khan's been there the whole time. But Mike Riggs was brought in to do a specific job. He was a piece of this jigsaw. Has he worked? I don't know. I think he has an awful lot to prove, Mike Riggs. If he has a job with Fulham next season, he has an awful lot to prove, because I'm really not convinced about him personally. Not that I know anything more than anyone. I don't. I just look at what people say. I look at the gossip. I look at the innuendo, and I try and make my own opinion. But I think there's too much smoke without fire to exonerate Mike Riggs from the blame for these things. And, you know, perhaps the damage was done with Kit. The damage was done pre-season earlier on. And we've been fighting fire since. So, you know, we don't know. Maybe Mike Riggs and Slavisa could be a good combination going forward if that carries on. But I think Mike Riggs' damage was done really, you know, last summer or the start of the season, with either not bringing the right players in or not bringing the right players in. And that sounds silly, but, you know.
No, I know what you mean by that.
There's good players and there's players which fit. And you don't necessarily have to be a good player to fit, but you need to be a good player to fit Fulham, you know what I mean, to fit in with
exactly.
The players we have.
Exactly. David, Mike Riggs has brought up a good point to us before, and this is a good time to talk about it, because when a bunch of these players came, and when I saw the players come in, and I was, I'm going to be honest with you, I was thinking he's building a squad, but what was interesting about many of them, many of these players were team captains, leaders. Here's a question. Did Mike Riggs bring in too many leaders and not enough followers, not enough players that just wanted to do their job, and other players that just wanted to be the leader, to be the one in charge, David? Could that be part of this as well?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. It goes back to, you can put this on a sort of any analysis you want. Another sort of similar analysis would be where you have a team where you try and play too many good players in the same team. It doesn't matter about leaders, but you know, I've got four fantastic central midfielders in my squad. They're the best four central midfielders in the country, so I'm going to play four central midfielders in my team, even though that means
a couple
of them will be out of position, or the team's going to be lopsided or whatever. But I want to play my four best players all in the team at the same time. It doesn't work. You've got to pay the best people in each position, not the best players in the squad necessarily. So that's kind of an analogy of the same scenario, perhaps.
Yes,
it is. You know, you can't play 11 captains in the team. You need, you know, someone who is a leader and 10 people who aren't, perhaps. Obviously,
right.
There's always going to be people who are leaders. You know, you probably want, you know, someone at the back, a defender who is a leader. Whether they're a captain or not, you need someone who is that leading defence, the person who says to the other back four, right, get out, you know, get back. You know what I mean? And because they have to play together as a unit. But I know exactly what you mean with that. And I think it is the balance that, you know, we do have a squad actually of lots of central midfielders.
Right.
And that just, you know, that happened just to be the analogy I use. But what's the point of buying more central midfielders when we've got central midfielders? Either
David,
get rid of
David,
someone,
that's a wonderful point. I'm sorry to break in. That's a wonderful point. Go ahead. I apologize.
Yeah.
But you, I think you nailed part of the problem, you know, because I remember when we had, and I'm thinking about this, Tom Kearney, LVC, Emerson Hyman, all these players, Jamie O'Hara, Scott Parker, too many, Ryan Tunnicliffe, Rowan Ince, way too many central midfielders, David. And then you have players playing out of position.
Mm-hmm. That's it, I think. And so for me, I'm in summation, I'm going to be very generous again.
Okay.
And I'm going to give Mike Rigg 4 out of 10.
Okay. And honestly, David, for me, the 4 is based on the team on paper I thought was decent. So I understand where you went with that because listen, you could very easily go lower, David. But on paper, many of these players, they were impressive with their former teams. They won the Player of the Year. There are so many of these players. But they didn't all fit together. And I almost forgot to mention, you know, Ben Pringle. Ben Pringle, you know, some tell me that Ben Pringle's best position is central. So here we go back to all these players in central midfield. You know, again, I wanted a true winger. That's not real. I mean, he kind of is, but he just doesn't have the pace for what we wanted. I just don't think that all these players that he brought in, mentality and position-wise, they just didn't all fit, David. That's why I think 4, believe it or not, I'm going to say this. I think you're being generous.
Well, thinking about it again, and it seems strange to say this now, but I think all of us were convinced last summer when we saw the signings that we were actually going to play, we're going to be playing a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3 kind of scenario. We thought,
I remember that.
We hadn't signed any strikers, so we thought we're going to see McCormack on his own up front with people around him because we signed these central midfielders. We brought in Kearney, we brought in Pringle, and we're going to do that because we're going to have a heavy midfield. But it didn't happen like that. So, yeah, I mean, it seems to demonstrate to a point a kind of naivety, really, in the transfer signings and policies and positions because we just keep bringing in people who play in similar positions. And there's an awful lot of competition in central midfield, but not necessarily strength in depth. Very much a match we have there.
That's a very good analogy.
We're very lightweight. Look how lightweight we are at right back technically. We have Rashley Richards, who's rubbish. We have Ryan Fredericks, who doesn't play 90 minutes and maybe isn't really a right back. And we send Jack Grimmer out on loan. Left back, Luke Garbutt, who's on loan. Our friend James Husband, who's on loan.
Right.
Kavanagh's not good enough.
I forgot to mention James
really
Husband, too. There's another goalman for me. Go ahead.
What? Is that another goalman?
Because I forgot to mention James Husband. I can keep going on and on. Go ahead.
But at this point, look how lightweight we were in some positions. You know, we're relying on left back. We basically relied on 2 loan players for the whole season. Otherwise, we've had to play someone like Tim Ream there when he's signed, who isn't, you know, he's not a fix at left back. He can do a job perhaps on the odd occasion if someone goes off injured or something, but not for long term going forward. Not in a team that lacks width and pace. You do not want to have, you know, a central defender or, you know, a slower player who doesn't go forward playing in fullbacks. You know, every team you watch these days, it's part of the modern game. The fullbacks have to be able to defend and they have to be able to get forward. And that's why the 3-5-2 is a good formation on paper. But even in the 4-4-2, it's the same scenario. But anyway, that's the thing. That's why Mike Rigg only gets a 4, because I don't think that... I don't think the structure of the squad has been balanced enough. It's been top heavy, or it's been heavy in some areas and extremely paper thin in others. So that's
okay.
Four for him. So that just leaves probably the big man himself, doesn't it?
It does. And listen, we have to talk about him because he's in charge of the whole thing, David. You know, Shad Khan is the owner, chairman of Fulham Football Club. So we have to look at the big picture. We have to look at him. And let's talk about it because, again, he hires these people. He hired Mike Rigg. He hired Kit. Then he hired Slavisa, obviously the people underneath him as well, to do a job. So it all begins with Shad Khan. So let's talk about him. Let's rate him for the season pass, David.
This is the hardest one of the lot.
It is.
And in some
it
ways,
is,
it's the easiest one of the lot because he's the owner. So the buck stops with him, basically. You know, he should have that thing that Harry S. Truman had on his desk. Was it Harry S. Truman? Hopefully
yes.
It was. I've got to get my trivia right now because I'm thinking about going in the World Quiz Championships next month. I'm considering it
there
anyway.
There you go, David.
So I need to swat up on my trivia. So was it Harry S. Truman who had the buck stops here on his desk? Someone will tweet
believe,
and tell me
I
I'm
believe
wrong,
so, but I believe so. But if I say yes, it could be another Goldman. So I check that out.
No, it's a Goldman if I'm wrong as well. But it was an American president anyway. I'm right with that much.
Yes, that
but
you're right
it.
About.
The buck stops here. And that's what Shahid Khan, he's the owner. He's, you know, he's everything, really. You know, it's his money. It's invested in the club. He makes the decisions who he hires and fires. Obviously, he doesn't make the decision on which players he brings in. But he makes a decision on which people decide which players we bring in and does every other job. He makes a decision on everything. He makes a decision
yes.
on who makes the tea at Fulham, technically, because he hires the person that hires the person who makes the tea at Fulham. He's
right.
the person... I went to see a stand-up comedy the other day, and it was like... It was wonderful. It took 20 minutes to tell the joke and get to the punchline, but it was wonderful the way the suspense he had in it, you know, the way he led us into the kind of getting to the punchline, but not quite, teasing us with it. I'm going to tease you with it, you know, Shahid Khan. He is the person who is responsible for the person who hires everybody, and et cetera, and et cetera. So the buck stops with him. And it's been, I'm afraid I have to use some French words here. It's been a fucking awful season, Russ, really. You know, we finished one above, you know, relegation, literally. We couldn't have been much lower. We scored a lot of goals, but that was really the only highlight of a poor season, that we scored a lot of goals. At least we saw the ball going in. We ended up with two good goal scorers. I mean, the counter-argument to that is not many people scored many goals otherwise. We had, you know, two... It was focused on two people. Most of our goals came from two people, or a good proportion of our goals came from two people, which was good for them. It was good that they got them. But again, talk about a squad which is like imbalanced. We have a squad where only two people score most of the goals. We have a squad full of central midfielders. We have all sorts of things going on. And Shahid Khan, the buck stops with him with all of these things. He's got to do a lot better than he's done. I know... He'll say, well, I've hired people who are good and I've done this and I was asked for £15 million for something and I've paid £15 million. So he can say, actually, well, it's not my fault. You know, I've done everything that was asked of me. I was told this guy was great. I was told that tea urn was brilliant. It makes tea twice as fast as the other one. I don't know. You know, I was told to buy this brand of grass to reseed the pitch. It grows nicer. You know, in Southwest London, it grows better. So he can say that everything else he's delegated, but the buck stops with him, I'm afraid, Shahid. And if you are listening, I'm sure you're not, but if you were listening, you know, you will know that ultimately you own the business, you run the shop. The mess, unfortunately, is your mess, and you have to make the decisions, and the tough decisions along the way: who to hire, who to fire, how much you pay people, what you do with your money. And if you want Fulham to get back to the Premier League, you need to make your money work a lot harder than it's been done, because your investment, my friend, has gone down from £200 million or whatever it was to probably a quarter of that at the moment. Unfortunately,
right.
that's the sad state we're in. So for Shahid, I'm afraid, this is hard, Russ. This is very hard. I think I'm going to give him 3 out of 10.
Wow.
Because the buck does stop with him, I'm afraid. The table doesn't lie, and the buck stops with him. What else can you say about it?
Okay. David, honestly, I think that's a little low. I understand why you gave it, because the buck does stop with him. You're 100% right. You really made your argument really good. But here's my thing on owners. And, yes, he delegates to people underneath him. He hires the people to do the job. And he has to hold them all accountable. But ultimately, he's accountable. The one thing that I do want to mention, for me, a big thing with owners is, are they willing to spend? Are they willing to put their money where their mouth is? And this guy has, David. Has his money been spent? Well, the answer would be no. But he has been willing to spend. There are owners out there and chairmen that won't spend at all, or will you know, really you know, not putting their money down where they really should. He has done that. He did that this year too. We could talk about overall. So I understand why you're going at a 3. I personally think it should be higher because he has been willing to spend. It's just the money was spent poorly, and that, like you said, it ultimately is a reflection on him. But he has had a willingness to spend money, and I know that he is far away, but he is involved. You know, he is, like you said, he's involved in everything to do with Fulham. Unfortunately, the money and the product has been bad. The money was spent badly, and that's why I understand why you gave that rating. If you're asking me, I think it should be a little bit higher. And let's hope he ultimately learns from his mistakes these last 3 seasons, because there have been a lot of them. Let's hope he learns from them, David. He has with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're actually pointed in the right direction. I'm here to tell you that the Jaguars have a chance to make the playoffs next season. That's how much he's improved the Jaguars. I'm hoping we see the same thing for Fulham, but that's a different sport, David. So do you understand where I'm going? We have a little more than 2 minutes left.
Well, let me qualify this very quickly.
Sure.
Is it better that he provides money for everything he's asked for? Or would he be a better owner if he said, no, you're not having the money. I need proof that you're going to spend it properly before I give you the money. I want to see results with what you've got. So, you know, it's not just about saying, here's some more money, go and spend it, go and buy me the best tea urn, the best football pitch, the best whatever, the best floodlights in the league, and actually say, no, you're not having the money. I want results before you get any more money. So that's just another side to the argument, Russ. So let's see anyway. Let's see where we go. But before we go, I've got one quick one for you, yeah, from Anthea's book.
Okay, quick, David, quick, because we only have a minute 40 left.
So what in Kiwi speak is Democrats?
Democrats.
That's right. This is what the rest of the world is hoping will win at the American elections. The Democrats, obviously.
Democrats, okay. Hey, I got...
We don't want
David,
another madman running
good
the
at
world.
This. I'm pretty good at this.
Democrats, very good.
Democrats, okay, very good. All right, David, it's time to wrap up the show. First of all, thank you so much for doing this. At a moment's notice, we actually changed the start time, so thank you, David. But I'm glad we were able to do this today. I think the show came out great. You were fantastic again on tough topics, to be honest. These are tough topics, so thank you, David.
Thanks very much. And if anyone wants to help me practice my world quizzing, get the quiz app, and find me on it. Send me a tweet and ask me and add me, and I'll have some trivia quizzing with you as well. Something to keep me occupied during the close season.
That's great. That's great, David. All right, time to wrap up the show. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, my friend. Excellent job.
Thanks, Russ. Cheers. Goodbye, everyone.
Cheers. Out of the cupboard, your boy.